You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practice Show podcast. My name is Kirk Barron. I'm your host. Thanks you for just joining in every single week to the number one podcast for better practice, better thinking, better life, better everything. Dentistry is an awesome profession, and we're just excited you joined us. Now, if you're joining us for the first time, I just want to welcome you to a great community of people that are learning. And this is a special edition, our Seattle Study Club partnership series, where I have an incredible guest today who's going to be talking about her journey in dentistry. And if you haven't been to the Seattle Study Club Symposium, I'm going to encourage you to check it out. Don't even think about it. Just go. And today is, or not today, this year is your year to join. If you've never been, we've got an incredible opportunity. We're going to be talking about that in just a second. Now, if you're joining us again for the first time, I'm just going to encourage you to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, Google Stitcher, Apple, iTunes, wherever, so that you can keep joining us every single week as we bring a great new thinker in dentistry. We also take a lot of show notes, so join us where you come back to this episode, you'll actually see the show notes in the link and everything that we mentioned during that time. So I am so excited to have you here, Laura Lee. I've known you for a while, and I always love for people to know their story. So I've seen you at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, and Bill Robbins is here, who's been with me on a lot of these things. And so we've got your back this whole time, and we're going to be the greatest supporters of you as you tell your story in dentistry. But tell us a little bit about who you are, and if people have never heard you or heard of you, who is Laura Lee Nygaard?
So I am mother of two amazing kids, married, live in Spokane, Washington. I'm a periodontist who absolutely loves what she does. I survived a stroke, and I'm very passionate about gut health and healing through foods and what I would call my journey to wellness, which I also discuss with my patients in their management of their periodontal disease, because successful treatment in that realm of dentistry is a lifelong commitment. It's not a one-time treatment. I think I'm passionate about encouraging young clinicians and women in particular that they can be very successful in dentistry. And being a female is, I think, an asset, not something that they should not be, that they should be willing to embrace, I guess.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, because it's so much fun. And those are some of our favorite people that we work with. They're just great thinkers, but that wasn't always the case, you know, in this journey. And you're going to share a few thoughts about that, but it's amazing. Even with the distributions, what's happening in dental school, everything. I mean, women have a very powerful voice, and they're also great thinkers, like unbelievable thinkers. And you guys will see that today as we learn a little bit more. Now, Bill, I always want people to know who you are too. You're going to be our co-host, but tell them a little bit. If people don't know who Bill Robbins is, who's Bill Robbins?
Yeah, I'm a general dentist in San Antonio, and I've been involved in Seattle Study Club not as many years as our guest has today, but I have been probably for the last 16, 17 years. And Laura Lee and I were talking, and it's my favorite, you know, the symposium, my favorite week of the year. And yeah. I know we're going to be talking a lot about that. So let's get on with the show. I want to hear from Laura Lee.
Absolutely. So Laura Lee, we're going to be talking about your first journey. Now, you and I were talking before we went live on this. You were actually one of the first originals that showed up in the early meeting. So take us through that whole journey. So, and what that was like, because it's pretty powerful when you hear this story.
So I started a practice from scratch in Spokane, Washington, 25 years ago. And my dream was to have an aesthetic periodontal practice known for connective tissue grafts and implant dentistry. And unbeknownst to me, I opened my practice 2 miles away from a world-renowned Brandmark trained oral surgeon. And I really, my first free gingival graft ended up getting negative feedback from a patient to a referring doctor who said, if you do that to another patient of mine, I'm never referring another patient to you. So I ended up going to my national periodontal meeting, and I heard Petey Miller speak, and he said, I haven't done a free gingival graft in 20 years. And I thought, if the inventor of the free gingival graft has moved on to other things, I need to do something different. And so I decided to dive all in to become an expert at connective tissue grafting, born out of giving a patient a painless surgical connective tissue graft experience, and perfected that over time. And I was able to get a lot of word of mouth referrals because of that. And people wouldn't send implants to me, but as I started to build a reputation for being great at anterior connective tissue grafts, I got my first implant referral. I was all excited because she'd scheduled. And then I got a phone call from her, and she said, I just got a consult for my wisdom tooth extractions, and I received a letter from the oral surgeon telling me that you weren't competent to place dental implants and I shouldn't see you as my implant surgeon. And that was devastating, because I think, you know, I was a young clinician trying to do my best for people. And while I was trained, I think there was something in the back of my mind where that really shut me down in terms of second guessing myself and my ability, I think, to be good at what I did. And it kind of took me back a little bit to how I entered dentistry, which was always seeming to have to fight for my position. So when I went to my original dental school interview, the interviewee said, are you here for your dental hygiene interview? And I thought, excuse me, but I got the paper in my hand from the dental school. I'm here for a dental school interview. But just that sort of pandering and always, like, I don't know, sort of questioning whether I was able to be there or not. I think when this oral surgeon put those words in paper and I read them, it was just kind of this devastating second guessing of maybe I didn't have a place to do that. So I didn't quit. I dug in, and I just continued to focus on what I could do well, which was take excellent care of people and give them a phenomenal patient experience. And I think the secret of my practice success is relational connection. My patients come to see me because they actually feel like, you know, I care and I don't hurt them. And word of mouth referral has been one of my number one referring sources for decades. Yeah. And I think, so as I was trying to build my implant practice, I had an implant rep in my office who said, there's these people in Seattle, Laura Lee, that you need to talk to. You're kind of like them. And I thought, well, that's weird. And they gave me Michael Cohen's phone number. And so I called, I've been trying to do a study club on my own. And I called Michael and talked to him about starting a club. And I remember, because I was pregnant with my son and I literally didn't go home. I was in the Albertsons parking lot because I was afraid of what my husband would think about this crazy idea of me joining this group. Anyway, so I signed up, and my first symposium was in 1999 it was Palm Desert. And I flew there with my husband and my 18-month-old son, and Mort Amsterdam walked in on a camel, and we were juggling to how to think like Leonardo da Vinci. And like my mind was exploding because it was the most creative, most interactive, most just mind-blowing experience that I had ever had. And what was, I think for me as a female dentist coming into that group, well, there was only two other women in that group that year, and everybody else was in blue blazers and navy khaki pants. It was the most amazing CE that I'd ever experienced. And treatment planning was something I had never really done. And so I remember going into a treatment planning session and everyone seeing this vision, and I couldn't see it. And I thought, wow, I need to figure this out, because I couldn't see what they could see about where they could take patients. And my husband at the end of the meeting was livid, because in those days, no family was allowed in the convention facility. So my husband had spent like 11 hours with our 18-month-old in the hotel room for for 5 days. And he's like, you are never coming to this meeting again. This is a flipping cult, because we were in class from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. And there was not this family interaction, because at those days it was just the guys, you know, and there was some spouses, but it didn't have the family feeling that it does now. And so, anyway, over the years, my husband has come to really understand that it's cheaper than therapy to pay for me to go to symposium, because those are my people. It's the place once a year I get energized to do it one more year. Because outside of symposium, if you go to regular meetings or talk to regular dentists, it can be pretty depressing. I think because we are perfectionists, we're always looking for what's negative, just naturally. And I think that what I observed about the Seattle Study Club group was that's not who they were. Seattle Study Club doctors want to see what's good. They love what they do. They're passionate about it. They want to tell you what they know. They're encouraging. And the most encouraging people for me when I started my practice as a young dentist were the old guard, or the grandfather types. They were the ones that referred to me. I would think my peers would refer to me, like the female dentists that were young. No way. Young people never referred when I was starting a practice. It was the old guys that were like, would throw me a bone here, throw me a bone there. And they were the ones that helped me grow my practice and carry my practice. And the same thing I found at Seattle Study Club. I mean, the old guys like Charlie English, you know, Neil Starr, they all invested in helping to teach me how to do treatment planning. And I was welcomed into those sessions. I wasn't, you know, not welcomed. And so I think, you know, at least for women in dentistry, where you might feel a little intimidated by joining a group like Seattle Study Club, there's no reason to feel that way. You might feel like an outsider only because the people that have been there a while know each other so well and have a connection. You just have to show up, because eventually they will let you in. It's not about them not letting you in. It's just that they know each other so well and have experienced things over decades that makes them connected. It doesn't mean there's not room for more connection.
Yeah. So my experience, and I'm new to it, is nothing. So take us through the evolution of that, because I'm sure I know you well enough, at least, that you're going to give Michael some feedback when that first started to happen. So take us through the evolution. So there were three women there that were there the first time, right? Mm-hmm. And then as you go, because my experience is exactly what you say. So we were joking again before we end. My wife has been several times and she's like, you hug so many people here and you actually kiss other men. And I'm like, she's like, that's a little weird. But the loving part of it and the family, everything that has evolved, and it is a welcoming, but how did it evolve? Like, what did you say to Michael after that first meeting, or to anyone?
Well, I didn't know Michael well enough to say anything at that time. That was my first meeting. But I knew there was something there that I resonated with. And so I don't think I went back the next year. My next meeting was Metamorphosis in Seattle. And I think that was just a great meeting for me, just professionally and personally, because I came back recognizing that if I wanted to grow my club locally and inspire my dentist to do interdisciplinary treatment planning, I needed to connect with their creative side. Like, I had to do more than just boring dental CE. I had to do something like what I saw at symposium, where it was, you know, great dental CE, but then there was a juggler. You know, like this crazy juxtaposition between science and then art, and science and then art. Like, there was something that just captivated my whole like personhood. And so I came back from that meeting, and I don't know if you remember the Coats. Did you remember the Coats? There was an a cappella group that Michael brought. And so I brought the Coats in for an a cappella session. And then I hired the fish guys from Seattle Pike's Place Fish Market. And they came to Spokane, and we threw fish in one of our theaters in Spokane. And I tried to do these crazy, like, not dentistry things that would somehow kind of grow connection. And I think that is what sort of started to captivate our group to kind of trust each other a little bit, because it wasn't just all dentistry. I would say after Metamorphosis, and then I started coming to the local meetings. So Michael in the day would have kind of a director's conference, but he didn't call the director's conference, but young directors would come to Kirkland, and we would all sit around a table, about 12 of us, and we would problem solve and share ideas. And it was through that I got to know Michael. And I would say I was probably involved for more than 10 years before I really started sharing what I thought to Michael about things, because by then I knew what CL Study Club was and what it represented. And I wanted to make sure that they stayed true to the integrity of what that was. So when I would share things with Michael, it was always from a place of, this is what's so special about this group. Don't forget what your core things are. Because I think that's a challenge with anything that grows, right? It's easy to go away from your roots and get involved in other things, especially as you grow big and things become successful. It's easy to forget those things. And so I think always my encouragement was for Michael was, this is about relationship. This really isn't about the CE.
Yeah.
The CE is fantastic, but I don't go for the, I mean, truly now I don't go for the CE. I go because they're my people.
Right.
I go because at the coffee stand, you know, like, I mean, back in the day, you know, Ward Smalley would talk to me, or, you know, Frank Spear was on the dance floor. Like, it was not, you know, like these guys that I would almost, to me, were like movie star. I mean, this is really dental nerdiness, but when you're a nerd dentist, you're not reading People magazine. You know, you're reading your journals, and the people that have published in the journals are like your movie stars, right? And when you finally get to this level where like you're talking to these people, it's like, it's a very weird, for me, it was like a completely out of body experience. I mean, it was amazing.
Oh, I'm going to piggyback on that, the nerdiness thing too, because I actually met Bill Robbins there and like just forced him to be my friend, and thank God he obliged. So
yeah,
it's powerful.
But and you grow up in dentistry reading about all these people and what they've accomplished. And then you're there, like at their kind of, you're at the table with them. And it's kind of, it's a bit of a transition. And I remember as a young clinician kind of thinking, well, that's weird. But as I was around them, it was this great resource. Like Bill Robbins is the kind of guy, if you sit next to him and had to ask him a question, he would share everything you needed to know.
Yep.
And in that moment, its symposium would be worth all of it. Forget the other CE. That little moment of connection would be like everything, because it would be so magical and so special. And it just would be something that would, for me, just inspire me to keep pushing myself to try to do life-changing dentistry and be that dentist that I want to be.
Right. And I want you to couple it with your journey, because, you know, you're pretty transparent about your journey. You didn't just open up your practice and then it just got flooded with patients. I mean, this was a time where you needed to be a part of something like that. And then you also went back and created something special in your own practice. And talk about that as a journey, as, you know, that you went through this whole process.
So I think, yes, I mean, I think any young clinician who starts a practice from scratch knows it's not easy. Patients don't just show up at your door. And I didn't ever do outside marketing. So this might, I don't know. I think some of it was the era that I started my practice in. 25 years ago, there was no internet. You know, it was actually considered unethical to market your practice. I mean, now I'm talking like a dinosaur, because young people are not going to understand what this is, but Bill will know what I'm talking about. In fact, if you advertised as part of our local district dental society, you were like banned from the dental society. Like if you had a billboard up, like it was a very different time in dentistry. And so going back to that patient that had the bad experience with the grafting, I recognized, if I wanted to build my business, I had to take exceptionally good care of people, and word of mouth marketing is probably where my strongest resource was. And so that's what I did. I started studying actually businesses outside of dentistry. So I read every book by the greats, like, you know, Southwest Airlines, Starbucks, the Ritz-Carlton, FedEx. I started reading these businesses that had phenomenal, Zappos, you know, anybody that had a phenomenal customer experience, I started studying what they did. And I recognized it was really, and I would say the book that was really pivotal for me was when I think it was Malcolm Gladwell, where it basically said, it doesn't matter how good you are, people don't see you because you're good. They want relationship. In other words, people will pick the less competent individual if they make them feel good. Which was a huge transition for me, because I'd been striving as a female to be seen and respected as a clinician, right? And now all of a sudden that didn't matter. Like I had to learn how to be relational, and I was kind of a nerd. So this might come as a surprise, but as a young clinician, I was not comfortable in a social setting with people. I would be much more comfortable with a book, two people. Like even to go to symposium final dinners was a huge stretch for me as a person, because I was very insecure and not comfortable in my own skin to go socialize. And then to be put in that environment with all these great dentists was a little stressful. And so over the years, I've learned that charisma is not a gift, it's a skill, and anybody can learn it. And I'm trying to think of the name of the book. It's called Winning with People. That's a book that teaches you how to have charisma, basically. And I started learning as I was trying to grow my practice about how to have better relationship skills with people, learning how to make others feel good, because it's less about you and more about how other people feel by how you engage with them. And so as I started taking care of people in my office, my word of mouth referrals have grown to become one of my top referral sources, even for the last 10 years. In fact, in 2008, when all the other practices were down, I was up 2% because of my in-office referrals. Like, our referrals from other doctors were way down, but our word of mouth referrals continued to grow. And here's a great example, I think, of how to connect with patients. I shared this earlier with Kirk, but this is a letter that I just received from a patient. And I'll give you the backstory on this patient. So this patient is a woman, a business owner, who had to lay 200 people off through COVID, even though she was considered essential. The stress of having to lay people off and figure out how to keep her business going was creating significant clenching. And she was clenching so much, her implant fell out. It was integrated in the sinus, doing great, but she hadn't come back in for recall. And she was, I think her occlusion probably wasn't quite ideal. And anyway, implant was loose. And so of course, that's not good news to deliver to any patient in the chair, much less during all these circumstances. But here's the letter that she sent to me after she was in my chair. It says, "Dear Dr. Nygaard, thank you so much for the gift of your caring thoughtfulness. It was far beyond anything I expect from a periodontist. You are a very caring, kind human who chose to give me the gift of learning to accept my emotions and encouraged me to cry. You helped me take a badly needed deep breath. Our talk helped alleviate some fears. Thank you for being so genuine and generous with your time and for sharing your thoughts on such a wide range of topics, all of which are relevant in today's unprecedented times. I haven't had much joy in 2020, but one thing is certain. When I think of you, it will be with a smile on my face. I am so blessed to have people like you in my life. I wish you all the greatest blessings in return. Gratefully, my patient."
Awesome.
And so here's what, she came in, I told her she's losing her implant. She starts crying and I just gave her a hug and said, "Cry." Like you. And then I said, and I think this is really important in our current time, we are not all in this together. And I think it's so pandering to say that to people. Each person's experience is very different. Now there's things we can relate to one another about, but to try to say our experiences are all the same through this is not reality. And I think, so she was feeling like nobody was experiencing what she was experiencing. And she just was overwhelmed, by the stress of trying to keep her business going. And now the stress of losing her tooth. And I just said, "You know what? It's hard. And I'm sorry that you're going through this." And I said, "No, it's not the same for everyone." Yeah. I know people making they're getting their government paychecks and they're living great.
Yeah. You and I were talking a little bit about marketing. You're like, I think one thing that's really working in marketing is relationship. Just calling somebody in this and saying, "Are you okay? Tell us about that."
Well, I did that through the shutdown with my study club. And I would say our club is stronger than it's ever been. And I actually gained members through it. So how that happened was I had a few last year, new young, happened to be some female dentists who had joined the club kind of end of the year, new into practice, just starting out. And so what I did is, in addition to the programming that Michael offered through Seattle Study Club, I would just set up a weekly coffee Zoom meeting, like Saturday, "Hey, just check in." And we would have, not everybody would come, but a significant number would come. And we'd just say, "How is everybody okay? Does anybody need anything? What are you dealing with this week?" And then I would sort of get a gauge of how people were doing. And then I would make phone calls to a few I thought were struggling more. I would just talk to them and say, "Hey, I just want you to know I'm thinking of you. And I know this is hard and it sucks. And if you need someone to talk to who understands it, I'm here for you." And I had one young dentist tell me, she's new to the area, that it was the only thing that got her through COVID was the study club, because she felt like she had some people who understood what she was going through.
Can you speak to this too? I'd love to hear from both of you guys. And I hear it all the time, being a dentist is isolating. you know, and I can't speak from a woman's perspective. I'd love to know that, but I hear it all the time from all different ages. Like, Kirk, you got to understand how hard this is. Sometimes you just don't have anybody and you feel like you're on an island alone, but add some clarity to that, or just, you know, and that's why we need community. We need community of people like, I know what you're dealing with. I have one too. I've got a dental practice. I know how difficult this is.
I mean, I think it is really isolating. And I think as a female, it's more isolating. And I will say from my experience, not only do you have to juggle the business as a specialist, the referrals, your team, then I have a family and I have a bunch of obligations for my family that I shoulder. And so it's very hard as a woman to do dentistry. And I think to have life balance. And I think this is one thing I would share with younger clinicians that I didn't do well in the beginning and I didn't understand. And I think, Kirk, you speak to this a little bit. I didn't recognize that 80% of my business could come from 20% of my people. I didn't understand that I could actually control my schedule where I didn't have to work 5 days a week like a maniac. Like, it was okay to shut the practice, you know, and not answer the phone, and people would still come. And and so I think, you know, knowing someone who's gone before you or that can speak into your life is so helpful to know how to navigate some of those challenging things. Because I didn't, you know, I think because I was a young dentist when I joined Seattle Study Club and there was so few women, I never once uttered the struggles I was going through as a woman dentist to anybody. Because I thought maybe it was unique to me. And number two, there wasn't a lot of women in Seattle Study Club who could help or speak to that. And I think I was afraid to mention it to the males around there because I didn't want to be perceived as weak or not be respected as a dentist. So I think the reason people don't reach out sometimes is you think you have to have all the answers and you don't. You just have to be a human connecting to a human. And sometimes that can just be, I don't know what to say. I don't know what that must feel like, but I'm here.
Right. Yeah. And this is a term that's come up a lot. Even first time I experienced Brené Brown was at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, and I'd never heard vulnerability that way. But actually, it's a strength now where people are just honest and authentic. And I think in a world where it's been turned so upside down, we don't really want to talk to somebody that has all the answers and all that great. And while we're all looking for the silver lining here, I think at the end of the day, human beings were created to be relational. And that's why when, you know, I'm sad that this year that will be virtual, but I'm looking forward to a day where we'll all be back and be back together again, because it is the relationships I enjoy. The education is second to none, but the relationships are critical.
You know, it's interesting, Laurie, you were talking about the isolation with COVID, and then we segued to the lonesome nature of being in private practice. And the correlation, I think, is 100%. It's a one-to-one correlation. And that is, there's isolation. We feel isolation in both of those different circumstances. But the answer to it was exactly the same. Even though COVID and private practice are worlds apart, your solution, which I think is absolutely the right solution, is to be there to help. And what you said is so true. Because if you have to have answers for everybody, then I would never call anybody, because I'm just not that bright. And I'm honestly not really great at giving advice to people. I'm just not. It's not a skill that I've got. But what you said is that that's not the key. The key is the reaching out. It's not being able to tell some brilliant thing to a person. It's letting them know that you care. So the solution to private practice and COVID are the same. That's having friends that care.
And I think, like, what I did very intentionally was 2 people a week I tried to call. You know, I didn't call everyone. I still didn't reach out to even everyone in my club. It was just 1 or 2 people a week. And I think that's the other thing. You don't have to reach out all the time to everyone. It's just, it's like a drip. It's like a little bit here and a little bit there. But I think if there's anything, at least for me personally, that I've learned in the whole COVID thing is that the value of relationships and how important they are and how important it is to just show up, not just say I'm another human and I'm here.
I think you're absolutely right. There's so many things that I took for granted that I will choose not to do so in the future. And I hope the memory of this, the blessing of it, stays for a long time. I do want to ask you on all these aspects, like, one of the questions I have for you is a young female considering dentistry, because I love it. I tried it. I'm like, you should think about dentistry. And they're like, I don't know. It's expensive. I don't know if I wanted it. I mean, if you love the science of it and you love the people of it, what would you say to a young dentist trying to consider a future in dentistry?
Oh, for a woman, it's a perfect fit because I can totally control my schedule. And here's, so to me, one of the greatest successes of my life, because I was a working mom, so I wasn't at all the kids' events, right? My son, his senior year, had to write a paper about someone he respected, and he chose to write it about me. And he told me that he never once felt like I was never there for him, which meant so much, because I didn't get to go to all the little awards at school and those types of things, but I was always home for the holidays because I could control my schedule. I was home, you know, and he never felt like I wasn't there, which I think for me was a super important part of the career that I chose. I wanted to have a family and I wanted to have quality of life. And I think dentistry, and I think for me, I love the challenge. No, not all dentists do, but I love the challenge of having a business and doing dentistry. It's like, I must be psychotic because it's not easy, but it is such a rewarding thing to build something that you build that's your own, to either fail or thrive at and be accountable for whatever choices you make, both in the clinic and in your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Bill, what would you say to a young person trying to consider a future in dentistry?
Like my son?
Yes.
So my son, Laura Lee, is in the second year of dental school right now. So he was a little late bloomer. He did some other things and circled back to dentistry. I feel the same way. I think the future for dentistry is great. In some ways I'm glad to be at the end because I'm tired. And on the other side of it is I'm not glad to be at the end because it's the most exciting time ever. I mean, when I get off of this, I've got to get with my lab guy on a DSD case, you know, and I'm going to be doing the mock-up on the patient this Friday. And there's so many things I'm really excited about, the digital side of dentistry and the interdisciplinary treatment planning between the periodontist and the orthodontist and me as a restorative dentist. It's the coolest time ever to be a dentist, but there's also going to be a lot of mediocrity in dentistry in the future. And so I think it's a great time to be a dentist that's committed and is practicing at the top. I don't know how good it's going to be in the middle. That would be my concern for dentistry down the road.
But that's true of all professions and industries. I mean, it's funny how in dentistry we're all screaming about DSOs and all that. Well, hello, Walmart. That happened. Look at what Ace Hardware has been able to do. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there is always room for exceptionally taking care of people with a relational experience. Always.
Yeah,
absolutely. I agree. I absolutely agree.
Totally agree.
That's why I'm enthused for the future because of that. There's clearly room at the top for sure.
And I think there's more need for that. I think more than ever, people are craving to be cared for. You know, like when I come, my patients are like, your team is amazing. Like everybody's so happy here. Like, I mean, they'll say, I hate coming to the dentist, but I love coming here.
It's awesome. That is awesome. It's so funny you say the Ace Hardware thing because I love my Ace Hardware and I have Home Depot the same distance that probably has more stuff, but the Ace, they're always there to help me.
Almost died years ago. Remember? Ace almost went out of business and then they became this like really specific customer experience thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to go back to, you know, why we all are connected here. As you're looking for opportunities to stay more connected, feel better about your future, and you mentioned it at the beginning, Laura Lee, is just the Seattle Study Club Symposium. Tell people what to expect. Now, I want to share a couple things. So on in January, we're going to have a very unique opportunity to be a part of it. On January 29th and 31st, Revisualizing Reality Symposium will be virtual. What's going to happen during that time? What can I expect if I've never been to symposium before?
I think you're going to expect some amazing continuing education, but not boring dental education. It's going to be, I would say, an eclectic, very, very intentionally curated educational experience, interspersed with probably some fun narration or Masters of Ceremony stuff with Kevin, who we all love. And I think something that would give you a little taste of sort of the unique Seattle Study Club learning experience, maybe from a place of safety because you're not with others quite yet. Mm-hmm. And if you get to kind of get a taste of what you see and like there, then I would encourage you to come and experience it, the relational aspects of it, because truly getting to be with people who think like you do in dentistry and who are aspiring to be at the top of their game in dentistry is like going to a pep rally before the game. And I really kind of get tired by November. I'm just kind of thinking, I don't know if I can do dentistry much longer. And then I get to symposium in January and I come home like I've just come away from the pep rally. Like I can do this for another year. Like I'm so excited and I can't wait to try this or share this. And then that cycles year after year. And I think this will be my 20th symposium, I think.
Awesome. 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 Bill, what do you expect when you get involved with symposium on any level?
Well, I think early on, my experience was early on, it was all about the continuing education because it was the most amazing year after year grouping of world-class speakers in one place over a week that I'd ever seen. So at first, it wasn't about the experience so much for me as the CE, because the CE was amazing, number one, and number two, I didn't have those relationships that Laura Lee's talking about. But over the years, it's totally changed for me. And at this point, it's clearly for me way about the experience and much less about the continuing education. So I think that's, for a young person, what they're going to be amazed at most of all, especially with this virtual one, is the quality of the lectures. I mean, if you look at the list of lectures this year, it's amazing. And you don't, if people are watching this, don't recognize a lot of those photographs, because a lot of these people are outside of dentistry, first of all. They're world-class leaders in other areas. And the other part of it is they come from all over the world. The dentists are literally from all over the world. So we're getting the young, exciting, upcoming, young, world-class dentists speaking to us. So commonly, for me, it's the first time I've ever actually seen many of these younger, world-class dentists. And so I think the virtual seminar that we're going to have coming up in January is going to be an amazing educational event. And I think, you know, and I'm hoping what Laura Lee says is true, that you'll still get a sense of the community part, but clearly you're going to have to really come to a live symposium to really get the feel of that, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. It's not about the education. It's about keeping the fire lit and the relationships. Actually, one of my favorite speakers of all time was a child psychologist, and I can't even remember her name. I do have her notes, though, and she gave Serena so many good things that we still use to this day, and I'm like, I got that at the symposium, which I never expected. So the balance is incredible, and I would just encourage you to check it out. We're going to post some links to it below in the show, and just join us and I'm so excited. And I look at the relationships, and those relationships are some of my favorite to this day, some of my favorite people in this very noble profession. So leave us with a good word. I always like a good word before we close out for the day, Laura Lee. This has been fantastic. So you get to go first. How about that? Give us a good word as we look forward to the future that may be a little uncertain, but you know.
So I would say, I will do this. I will leave you with a challenge. So please. I would say, make a point this week to connect with two people. Love Just it. Reach out and say, how are you doing? I'm here.
I love it. Awesome. Thank you. Bill, what's your good word of the day?
My good word is that there'll be many people watching this over the next few weeks, and not all of them are going to be members of a study club. And my advice, especially a younger dentist, is in terms of bang for your buck, in terms of learning, the best way to get that is through a study club. It doesn't have to be a Seattle study club. Seattle study club is a great way to do it. But for young dentists that want to practice at a higher level and develop relationships in their community, I think being a member of a study club is absolutely the number one thing that you can do. So I'm a giant fan of study clubs. And specifically, I've been a member of the Seattle study club now for more than 15 years. Well, I'm obviously a big fan of Seattle study clubs, but it doesn't have to be that. You need to be a member of a study club.
Yeah, that is so, so absolutely true. So if you're not a member of a study club, you have to become a member and you have to join us. And I'll piggyback on that by saying, I think one of the most important things we can do is just always trust that the future is going to be better. You can never tell yourself, oh, the best years are behind me. And that's part of this whole thing, is that no matter what's happening in the world, I'm going to play a game every day. It's going to be, how can I make my best self every day and trust that the future is going to be bigger and better. And this is a big part of it, being around people that think really well. And by osmosis, just by being in the room, even if it's virtual, it's going to make your life better. So thank you guys for being on. I really appreciate this.
Thanks for having me.
This is some of my favorite stuff. I get to do all this different stuff during the course of the day. This is hands down my favorite stuff. Just checking in with you guys. So Laura Lee, I accept your challenge. I will do that this week. So Perfect. Good stuff.
Can you imagine if everybody did that? We would change the world in dentistry.
I think we could. It starts with one call at a time. So it's awesome. Well, you guys stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for watching. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor, hit the share button, share with your friends. Click the link below. Check out more about Seattle Study Club and Seattle Study Club Symposium. Come join us in January. I know you'll love it. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.